These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. I am Chris Cook. This is the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm glad you guys are enjoying these, and I just love getting listener mail. Yeah, you guys aren't reading these, you're listening to them. I love getting emails from you guys about things, because I do like, as I mentioned last night, I really do like hearing what's on your minds. What are the things that you're thinking about? What are the things that you're struggling with as you struggle to get the word out and to be a warrior in this movement, to be one of the people who's making this world a better place and saving the Republic and being one of those on the front lines? There are challenges to that. There are many challenges to that. One that I experienced today is time. Time is tough. And so, again, I do appreciate hearing from you guys, because in part, it helps me plan my show. It really does. It helps me understand what it is that you want to hear. I don't have to cast around for subjects. I can look at what's going on and answer that. Sometimes it leads me down really, really weird paths, like last night's podcast. I have the smartest listeners on the planet. I have said that for over 15 months now, 16 months. Definitely the smartest listeners on the planet. And last night's podcast, if you listened to it and you didn't get it, listen to it again. I am told that if you listen to it twice, the point actually does come out. So I did my best. I really did. I'm not a constitutional lawyer. You know that. So the subject for tonight's podcast is actually in advance of tomorrow. And so I wanted to talk about this tonight. Of course, tomorrow we have the second debate, the CNN debate, for the Republican candidates in the party. And I don't know if you're going to hit a debate watch party. I recommend that you do. If you can find one, the Colorado GOP is throwing debate watch parties all over the state. There are plenty of tea parties who are also having them. And so you have that option to go out and watch the debate in the company of fellow, you know, liberty-minded people, and get a feel for, you know, what's the room like? What are the reactions to the candidates? That kind of thing. It's a lot of fun to be able to do that. There are also several people I know who will be live tweeting or live blogging during the debate. Those are always fun to tune into as well, so that you kind of get. And they're usually quite humorous and tongue-in-cheek, and that's a lot of fun to watch. I don't recommend playing a drinking game as long as Donald Trump is on the stage, because you won't make it past the third question. Just a recommendation. So the debate, you know, I mean, and we have these debates. We have them every presidential cycle. We have them actually every election cycle. You'll see debates between the candidates. And the question comes, as it did with the first debate in this Republican field, what is a debate? And how do you do this? And the question is actually broader than that. It's not just the Republican debates or the Democrat debates or the candidate debates. It's not just about that. The question that I received tonight, the one that made me really perk up my ears, was about debate in general. How do you debate in general and be effective and know that you're sort of covering your flanks and that you've got an unassailable argument that you can bring? Now, and I thought this was really interesting. Let me read this to you, and then we can take off on this subject. It says, so much of the discussion that I hear, and I listen to all the big guns at various times, is what the position is on one side or other of an argument. Rather than intelligent and thoughtful debate, most of what I hear is, oh, yeah, 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 you got it, yeah. You know, I mean, that's really what it all is. I am rarely left with any solid reasoning that I feel I can use to counter the arguments from the other side. I hear great sounding positions, but the positions always leave me worried that they are vulnerable to attack, and they leave me feeling unprepared to counter arguments coming from the other side. I have started reading a textbook on critical thinking, which should help me assess the other side's arguments. I had to stop reading Mark Levin's book, Men in Black, because he just kept railing against the horrible actions of the Supreme Court. But I'm left with almost nothing but his vehement displeasure. I kept wanting to ask, but why? This is a great subject, and the reason why I think this is such a great subject is because it touches on one of the key missions of this show. One of the key missions of everything that I do on the radio, on the podcast, whatever, is to equip you to go out and have these discussions, to give you the ammo to put in your pouch so that when you get into one of these discussions with somebody who doesn't agree with you, that you can have, first of all, a civil argument with somebody who doesn't agree with you, and you can help persuade them, you can help convince them. Now, this subject is broad. I mean, this was one of the main subjects that back when they actually did education, you would study rhetoric, and that is the study of persuasion. It's the study of argumentation. You would talk about rhetoric. You would talk about the skill set needed for that. Of course, this goes back to Plato. This is not a new subject, and how to have these arguments, how to do these things in a way that is effective. It's a huge, huge subject. So tonight I'm going to give you the Chris Cook primer on this and let you know kind of how I approach these things, kind of how I developed a skill set such as it is. And maybe a little bit of hubris there, because I do think that I am good at debate. It's one of my better skill sets. Part of the reason why I think I'm good at it is actually comes from my professional life. It's not so much from my political life. Over the course of the past decade, I have had to construct arguments in support of the opinions that I present in court. And so from that perspective, having been cleaned, had my clock absolutely cleaned on cross-examination once, and that's all it takes. You never ever forget that experience, because it's not a happy day. Having had my clock clean once, I understood that, okay, I need to understand the elements of argument. I need to understand the elements of how to support my position, which is essentially what it is. That's what I do in my professional life. That's what I do here. It's the same skill set, which is awesome, because I love it when those things come together, and I don't have to learn a completely new different thing. It's the same thing. You have an opinion. You have to know why you have that opinion. And so that is the skill set that I have developed over the course of the past decade. I have a guilty confession to make as well, that part of the reason and part of my training ground has been Facebook. Isn't that disgusting? I think it's kind of sad that is where I'm getting a lot of my training. But, I get into these political discussions on Facebook, and I have had the privilege and the pleasure of debating people who hold opinions that are different than mine, but were willing to engage in an honest intellectual manner and help me shore up my arguments so that we didn't end up in this screaming match of, oh my God, you're such a hypocrite, and how can you have no integrity, and how come you're not out knocking on doors, and oh my God, was that Jesus who just flew over your head? That kind of a discussion. Instead of having that, we had an actual civil conversation about, okay, I believe this because this is my premise. This is where I'm coming from. And do you agree with that premise? And I would say, yes, I do. And then we would walk another step down the road. Okay, well, from that premise, this is where I get to. Do you get there? And I would say, no, I don't interpret it that way. I interpret it this way. And we would find out where we diverge, even though we would maybe have the same basic premise, the same basic principles, that we want everybody to thrive, or we believe in liberty, or whatever that premise is that was the nexus for that argument. And then be able to follow that down the road to determine where did we diverge? What is the different interpretation that we have so that we come up on opposite sides of this? And those were fascinating, wonderful conversations because they taught me a lot about argument. They taught me a lot about how to have an argument civilly, which is so lacking these days. I mean, when was the last time you got into a civil political discussion with somebody who didn't agree with you? When was the last time you did that? Think back. I am, like I say, I'm very honored and privileged to have several friends in my life who don't agree with me on everything. But we're able to have these conversations because we can talk about, okay, well, I believe in this. Well, I believe in that too. And be able to trace this down. My hairdresser, she's not my hairdresser anymore. She retired and made me very, very sad. But she and I, you know, for 10 years, we would talk about this stuff. Of course, I'm sitting in her chair for an hour. So, you know, we would talk about this stuff. And she was very, very intelligent, wonderful, wonderful woman. And we finally figured out, after having these discussions for a few years, we finally figured out that she didn't believe that it was bad for the government to take a bigger role in our lives. And I did. She. I think the way that she phrased it was, I am not uncomfortable with the government having that role. And so we knew where we diverged, that she was comfortable with that. And I continued to work on her. I tried. You know, she was still a Democrat. It was no big deal. You know, but she was an intelligent person who approached her beliefs and approached her politics from a position of, okay, what do I believe, and do I have the integrity to back this up? And that kind of a discussion is absolutely wonderful. It truly is. Even if they don't agree with you, it's absolutely wonderful. That, and the reason being that you get to explore your own ideas, and you get to understand where it is that you're coming from and what forms the basis for your perspective. I have another friend, if you listened to me when I was on Grassroots Radio Colorado, and he may even be listening to this podcast. He tells me that he does. Mark used to come on with me once a month. And he was my liberal friend, my token liberal friend, as we termed him. And, you know, Mark is actually, he's more independent than anything. But he was willing to engage in an intellectual fashion about anything from gun control to, you know, to welfare or whatever. And he's always been very honest with me about what his premise is, that we have an obligation to help our fellow man, and that we can't trust, he believes, this is what he believes, is that we cannot trust our fellow man. And so in order to help people who don't have enough, we have to coerce. That's his perspective. Now, yes, I coming from anybody but Mark, I would probably be, you know, trying to scratch their eyes out. But because we were able to sit down and have a civil discussion about what that principle meant, what the outcome was of that principle, what the natural corollaries are, I believe perhaps maybe he has reconsidered some of his opinions, or at least reconsidered his bases for them, and started to look at the bigger picture and look at the unintended consequences and that type of thing. I am positive I'm going to hear from Mark after he listens to this one, because this will be very, very interesting. So I think it's key when you're thinking about debate, I think there's a few steps that you have to go through. First of all, the very first thing is that you have to know what your own principles are. You have to know what's axiomatic for you that everything else is derived from. For me, that means that we are autonomous people with free will. That is one of my most basic axioms. We are autonomous people. We have free will, and it is good that we exercise that. Second axiom is that I want every single human to thrive. For me, there's no greater happiness than that. There's no greater good than that. And so that's the goal, is the thriving. So if we're autonomous free people and we are meant to thrive, what flows out of that? For me, what flows out of that is conservative principles, limited government, and everything else that you hear me talk about on this program. That's really the basis for all of it. Is that we are autonomous people with free will, and that we are all meant to thrive. When you put those two things together, in my opinion, in all my thinking that I've done on this, I don't see how you can come to anything but conservative principles with that. But people do come to it from another perspective. And so when we come back, let's talk about how you take your own principles, your own axioms, and apply that when you get into a debate. We'll be right back. And that is a tune from an artist named Salmo, S-A-L-M-O. The name of the tune is Chaos, K-A-O-S. I don't think they're from America, but that's okay. Freemusicarchive.org. You got to go find this stuff. It's just cool. So you're listening to Chris Cook, and that would be me. And this is the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. We're talking about debate. And I'm talking about it in sort of an abstract form. And of course, we have the debate, the Republican debate, the second one, is tomorrow. And I will be at the Denver GOP debate watch party. Looking forward to watching that debate in the company of friends and like-minded people. And I will give a recap of the debate tomorrow evening. But I'm trying to get to the point where we can talk about debate, like actual debate. You know, like when you encounter somebody who doesn't agree with you, and you're trying to persuade them, you're trying to show your position, shore up your position, and persuade them to join you in your position, and to join you in your opinion of how things ought to be, what should be the result. And the study of all that is something called rhetoric, and we've been studying it for thousands of years. I mean, this is something, like I say, it goes back to Plato. Aristotle talked about it. You know, these are not new ideas, and it's not a new thing. Humans throughout history have been trying to persuade one another to their own point of view. And so how do you do that? I mean, how do you really do that? If you observe Facebook as your model, it's likely, unless you were as fortunate as I was to find people who are willing to engage in thoughtful debate, you're going to find people who are simply going to engage in ad hominem attacks. They're going to yell at you. They're going to say mean things. They're not going to engage you honestly. And, you know, I find it all the time, obviously. I mean, I do politics on Facebook. I do politics everywhere, but I do politics a lot on Facebook. So, yeah, I mean, you know, anybody who doesn't agree with me, oh my gosh, the directions that they go with those arguments, and I'm sure you've experienced it too, the directions they go with these arguments just makes you laugh. It's so ridiculous and it's so infuriating that if you don't laugh, then you're just going to drive yourself nuts. So you just laugh. And you can't figure out why they don't understand what they believe. They don't know what they believe. They cannot answer your objections to whatever their talking point is, because that's all they've got is talking points. And I'm hoping that that's why you listen to me and you listen to people like me, because hopefully we're presenting something a little bit different. We're presenting the thoughtful side, the analytical side of why we believe what we believe, you know, and why are we going for this goal? Why is it bad for Iran to have nukes? Why should we reform the welfare state? What is limited government? What is, you know, and what does that look like on a day-to-day basis? And why is it the best way to go? What were our founders thinking when they were putting together this country? And how can we fulfill that potential that they saw in this form of government, in this idea called America? And it's that thoughtful approach. These are not talking points. I don't do talking points. I cannot tell you the last time I turned on Fox News. I think it might have been the debate in August. I think that was the last time I turned on Fox News. You know, I don't want to hear Bill O'Reilly tell me what I should be saying. I want to know, okay, how does this tie into the principles? How does this tie into the founders? How does this tie into what I want to see happen in this country and saving the republic? Give me the dots and then connect them. That's what I want. That's what I want from talk radio. That's what I want from my news. That's what I want from the stuff I read. And that's why I do this program. That's why I do it in this way, is because I want you to have those same tools. I want you to have that same equipment to be able to go out and have these conversations. So when you encounter somebody, I mean, you need to prepare. And a lot of times it's a matter of learning how to think, which is something that our schools unfortunately don't teach anymore, which is really bad. And you got to know kind of how to think. And part of how to think is to know what you think, and then to know why you think it. Why is this the best thing? You know, I talked on recent podcasts about integrity and intellectual integrity. Boy, that was hard for me to say. Integrity, intellectual integrity, these are systems. I'm talking about systems that hold together, that are true to themselves, that don't have parts that are disconnected and contradictory. That's what, to me, integrity is. If I'm going to have an intellectual integrity, that means that the things that I espouse don't contradict one another. I'm not going to say you cannot use the force of government in order to enforce your lifestyle and then turn around and say, but I can use it to enforce mine. I'm not going to say that because it's not a position with intellectual integrity. It doesn't have that. So, you know, as much as I know the conservative position is that we have to be against all this and we have to be for using government to be against all this, it's not a position that syncs with integrity for me. And so, therefore, I come out against using government to define marriage. I come out against also using government to tell people how they think and how they must think and who they must serve under the public accommodation section of the Civil Rights Act. So Jack Phillips has as much right to think and act the way that he does as the gay couple who walked into his store demanding a cake have a right to think and act and conduct their lives as they want to. They just don't get to take their lives and impose their will on somebody else. That violates Jack Phillips' rights. That's a position with intellectual integrity. I can support the concept of, yes, gays have a right to marry, and also that Jack Phillips has a right to not provide the cake for their wedding reception. That position has intellectual integrity. And the reason why I can get there is because I know what I believe. I believe in limited government. I believe in individual rights. I believe that everybody is equal under the law. I know what I believe, and I know how that applies in that situation. So I have the strength of my conviction. People still disagree with me. It doesn't mean that I win every argument. It just means that I know that I'm right, and everybody who doesn't agree with me is therefore wrong, because I've thought through my positions. And I believe strongly, you know, somebody points out to me, wait, you've got a problem with this, because there's an intellectual disconnect between this position that you're, this thing that you're saying, and this other thing that you're saying. And when that happens, then I change my position. That happened to me last night. I came out a couple weeks ago saying Kim Davis should be in jail because she's violating the law. Well, you know what? Turns out she wasn't. And there is a law in Kentucky that says that gays do not marry, and Kentucky has not reformed their law to conform to the Supreme Court decision. So there was no law that Kim Davis could be forced to uphold. In fact, she was upholding the law in Kentucky as it was, so she shouldn't have been in jail. So I came out originally saying that, yes, she did the wrong thing. You know what? I had to change my position because I was wrong. I was wrong. And somebody pointed out to me that, yes, I was wrong. So that's intellectual integrity. Know what you believe. Know why you believe it. Know what the facts are. Know what the facts on the ground are. And don't listen to any talk show hosts who don't know what the facts are. And that includes, okay, well, keep listening to me even when I get it wrong, okay? Just going to say that. So So you got to understand what you believe and why, and what the arguments are for your own position. The more important part, though, of doing debate, the more important part of engaging people who don't agree with you is to understand their position. That is the key. And so, you know, yes, you want to know what your own position is, but it's not all rah, 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 I'm right, I'm always right. It's understanding what their position is. You have to research, you have to read the other side. And sometimes it's distasteful. I don't watch MSNBC either. I'm an equal opportunity not turning on the television person. I'm not going to watch MSNBC. I will on occasion read Slate. I will read Salon. I will read Crooks and Liars. I will read Daily Cause. And I want to see what the other side is saying. I want to see, you know, what their perspective is, how they are bolstering their arguments. Are they bolstering their arguments, or are they all rah, 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 yay us? I can say, I think, based on the reading that I've done, maybe I'm not being broad enough. But a lot of times what I'm seeing is that the left, and especially the very progressive left, they do not have a solid intellectually cohesive basis for what they believe. They don't have well-grounded rules. They just have these feelings. A lot of times that's really what it is. They have these feelings. I feel like society should look like this. I feel like it's bad that rich people make too much money or make so much money when there are other people who make very little. I feel like it's bad that there are homeless people when there is so much wealth in this country. And, you know, I mean, from an emotional standpoint, of course, I can understand exactly why they would say that. And I understand their argument. It's an emotional one. And I have emotions. I am human. You know, I mean, I do have compassion. I actually don't eat puppies for breakfast, and the horns and the tail have fallen off at this point. So, you know, I am a person who has compassion. I'm somebody who has emotion, and I get these arguments, but they're not solid arguments from which to base the governance of a country, because they are not grounded in the rule of law. They are grounded in the rule of man. And I believe very strongly in the rule of law, because I believe that we have to be careful with our country of allowing emotions to rule. That's the way Europe was ruled, and basically the rest of the world, for millennia. America is different. We're better. Yes, we are, really. And it's because of that idea of the rule of laws. And we're reigning in the passion of men. Back to the subject. You have to understand what your opponent's argument is. And you have to be able to articulate. You have to be able to articulate their positions. Now, I'm going to go a little long on this podcast tonight, because I want to tackle a concrete example. It's a lot of abstract, and I've been warned that I get too abstract and it's hard to follow, and, you know, I get all that. Okay, so we're going to make this very concrete. And we're going to make it very concrete with a controversial issue, abortion. The reason why I chose abortion to illustrate this is because I have actually been throughout my lifetime on both sides of this debate. So I do understand both of the arguments. I do understand, I think, both sides of the argument. Maybe not all of the pro-choice arguments, maybe not all of the pro-life arguments, but this is how actually I went from being pro-choice to being pro-life, is evolving through this process. So I started when I was less conservative than I am now, and less understanding of principles and politics and how all this stuff comes together. And my argument for being pro-choice was one that was rooted in individual liberty, I thought, because I was making the argument that if we do not control our own what goes on inside our own bodies, we have no liberty at all. If we do not control what happens inside the barrier of our skin, then we have no liberty at all. And from that perspective, I mean, I thought it was a pretty powerful argument, and it's a powerful argument for liberty until you realize that there is another set of rights involved. And so from we have to be able to control everything that goes on inside our own skin, I evolved to, well, we have a complex set of rights going on here. We have two sets of rights, and what's more difficult, what's more complicating about this is that they are dependent upon one another. They are bound together. Obviously, there's the rights of the fetus and there's the rights of the mother. And so the question becomes, whose rights are paramount? And so for a long time, I came down on the side that the mother's rights are paramount because she is a realized human being, whereas the fetus, the baby, is a potential human being. And so I made the distinction between those two sets of rights. I put them into a hierarchy and said that the mother's rights, because she is a realized human being, are greater than those of the potential human being. Therefore, I am still pro-choice. And then I continued to think about that. I said, how can rights be subject to any other rights? If I believe we are all created equal, and I believe that we all have equal rights, natural rights, then how can I believe that one set of rights is subordinate to another set of rights? And when I went down that path, I realized that they're not. Based on my own principles, based on my own axioms, I could not subordinate one being's set of rights to another being's set of rights. From an intellectual integrity standpoint, I am a personhood person at this point in time. I believe that those rights invest at the time that the child is conceived, and that baby has rights, and that baby should have those rights respected, and the baby can't speak up for themselves or for him or herself, and so therefore we kind of have to do it for them. From that perspective, I am a personhood person. I have not yet applied that in my politics. It's obviously politically, it's a very, very complicated issue, which is just my excuse of I need to walk down this path a little bit more. But it's a tough issue because getting other people to walk down that same path is tough. But the bottom line is, and I didn't really want to talk, you know, necessarily debate abortion tonight, but what I wanted to point out is that there are advantages to understanding both sides of this argument and understanding how do you get from that side of the argument to this side of the argument. You have to know what that side of the argument is. You have to know where your opponent is coming from. You have to know that pro-choice people believe that the baby doesn't have any rights and the mother does. You have to understand that as an axiom, that's an axiom to them. And to be able to walk them forward down the path, so you believe the baby has no rights. Well, when does the baby have rights? Is it at birth? Is it after birth? Is it before? You know, when does that happen? And be able to walk them down that. But you have to understand where they're starting from in order to have that debate. The main question, or the most poignant question, I think, that my listener asked was, or the most poignant statement that he had was that he was worried that his positions were vulnerable to attack and left him feeling unprepared to counter arguments coming from the other side. The best way to deal with that is to know what you believe, to get to the bottom root of what you believe. Think about it. Don't parrot talking points. Don't. It doesn't help anybody if we do that. There's shortcuts. And if you're stuck on an issue and you don't know where to go with it, okay. You know, I mean, I understand shouting these things out every once in a while. I've done it too. But, you know, you really ought to examine your position on issues that you're going to debate and the things that you're going to take on and understand what you believe, why you believe it, how it ties into your principles. And when you do that, and you put forth your argument, they'll argue with you until the cows come home. But if you have the courage of your convictions, that your principles are right, then you're not going to be assailable. They're going to be able to yell at you, call you a racist, say that you have no integrity, and oh my God, was that Jesus who just flew over your head? Sorry, I keep bringing that up. It was just the funniest insult I had seen on Facebook in a long, long time. So I have to keep putting that one out there. That's what they come back with when they have nothing else. They come back with logical fallacies. They come back with ad hominem attacks. They come back with, you know, you just don't know what you're talking about, and I'm a really good debater, you know, that kind of thing. You know, they have nothing. They have nothing left. And that's when you know you're winning the argument. So take solace in that. Have the courage of your convictions. Know what they are. And go out there and have some fun. This is how we persuade people, and this is how we have those discussions. This is how we win back the republic, is one person at a time. So I hope that you will. I hope this has been helpful. I know, again, I know this was rather abstract. I hope that the abortion discussion kind of brought it home. But, you know, have some thoughts about this. And you know, really, this is what we talk about every day. Is these kinds of issues. What are the principles that are under this? And how do we get from that to practical application? That's how you have the courage of your convictions about what the policy issues, you know, should be, what the policy positions, I should say, should be, and how to do politics and how to move forward and how to make this all work and save the republic. It's like a win-win. It's awesome. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining me. Find me on Facebook, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. If you do not already like my page, please, please come like my page. We are close to 6,000 likes. This is a huge milestone. So I hope you'll come and find me. If you want to email me, Chris, K-R-I-S, @grassrootsradiocolorado.com. I would love to hear from you. And again, remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.